ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 24 टेक्स्ट 15 प्लीज रिपीट। मया कालात्मान दात्रा कर्मयुक्तम इदं जगत् गुणप्रवाह एतस्मिन् उन्मज्जति निमज्जति। प्लीज रिपीट। ऑल रिजल्ट्स ऑफ फ्रूटिव वर्क हैव बीन अरेंज्ड विदिन दिस वर्ल्ड बाय मी। द सुप्रीम क्रिएटर acting as the force of time, rises up towards the surface of this mighty river of the modes of nature, and sometimes again submerges. Translation and purport by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Unmajjati refers to one's promotion to the higher planetary systems as mentioned in previous verses, and Nimajjati refers to being submerged in a miserable condition of life by impious activities. In both cases, one is drowning within the mighty river of material existence, which carries one far away from one's real home in the kingdom of God. I'm reading text 16 now. Anurbhat Krishna Stulo Yo Bhava Prasidyati Sarvopi Ubaya Samyuktaha Prakritya Purushena Cha. Translation: whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contains both the material nature and its enjoyer, the spirit soul. Text, there is no purport. So text 17. Yastu yasyadit antascha savai madhyam cha tasyasan vikaro vyavara rartho yata tajasa partibaha. Gold and earth are originally existing as ingredients. From gold one may fashion golden ornaments such as bracelets and earrings, and from earth one may fashion clay pots and sauces. The original ingredients, gold and earth, exist before the products made from them. And when the products are eventually destroyed, the original ingredients, gold and earth, will remain. Thus, since the ingredients are present in the beginning and at the end, they must also be present in the middle phase, taking the form of a particular product to which we assign for convenience a particular name, such as bracelet, earring, pot or saucer. We can therefore understand that since the ingredient cause exists before the creation of a product and after the product's destruction, the same ingredient cause must be present during the manifest phase, supporting the product as the basis of its reality. Purport: the Lord here explains that the original cause is certainly present in its effect, citing the example of gold and clay functioning as the causal ingredients of many different products in which gold and clay continue to be present. For our convenience, we assign different names to temporary products, although the essential nature continues to be that of the ingredient and not of the temporary product. Om Jnanate Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshurunnatamena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishvaya Sabsa Guru Sivya Chapataga Swami Nidrami Namachara Padaya Nathaya Kripa Padaya Nekorka Dhamnaya Nagaragam Thaya Namo Mishpadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhuda Nishimad Bhakti Vedanda Swami Nidrami Namasya Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachara Nirvishesha Swami Prasatya Dhisthara Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vanda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna. For some of you who are coming in for the first time or coming up a long time, so we are in the middle of this particular chapter called the Philosophy of Sankhya. Now, this is what is happening, is there is a discussion that is going on between Uddhava, rather Lord Sri Krishna, and Uddhava. Now in that particular thing, now is suddenly Krishna is talking about creation. Now one may wonder, it's already the 11th canto, Krishna is winding up. We read so much about creation in the second and third chapter, third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And why we're talking, suddenly he's talking about creation. And then he's talking about one particular philosophy called Sankhya. That is because the Bhagavatam does not follow what is known as a chronological order, like what we do study in history and all that. They do not follow that. It is emphasized, whatever subject matter is necessary at the particular period will be emphasized. Now, if you don't understand, I'll start again. The Bhagavatam has got, all Puranas have got five subject matters. Starting with Sarga, Prati Sarga. Sarga means creation. First creation is creation of the universe. We'll do something about the creation now. This particular chapter discusses creation. First the universe is created. Then what happens? Brahma is there and he is doing secondary creation. He creates the 14 planetary systems. That is called Prati Sarga. Then the third topic that we discuss is what is known as Manvantara, the period between two Manus, Manvantara, and the Prajapatis, the progenitors, how they procreate this world. We study about them. Then we study about Vamsanu Charita, which means, Vamsa means dynasty. There is solar dynasty and there is lunar dynasty. Surya Vamsa, Chandra Vamsa. And then the genealogy, who is the father, and then the son, and then the son, who was, and how this guy ruled, and how. So we study about all that. And then finally there is Vedic geography. Not that stupid geography that we study in our textbooks. This is simply a kind of thing that, you know, is a different dimension, entirely different. People go and see the movie Avatar. And then they use this 3D, you know, 3D movie, and then they go, wow, look at this. And the Vedas, that is about three dimension, and the Vedas are describing about 64 dimensions. We can't understand. That's why the description is so different. When Brahma describes the world, we go crazy. What is he talking about? When Arjuna is talking about a thing, and he is looking at a different angle, even that we can't understand. And like that, different people are looking at the universe in different ways and explaining, and that's why it's mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling because it is mind-boggling. And we can't understand. Anyway, basically, what I'm saying is, so we don't study, like in history, we say what happened before Christ, after Christ, in the AD, and all that we study. Prabhupada calls this, they say that's chronological order. According to historians, the fact that they will accept is Buddha came 2500 years ago, and then just Blessed Lord Jesus Christ was here 2000 years ago, and then they start off with that. And then we keep on reading about that. But what is the use? Prabhupada says that is chronological nonsense. And he thundered in Mumbai. He said, I will never teach this to my children. Because it's a waste of time. What is the use of studying about this political leader? For instance, okay, let's look at Australia. 3 years ago, there was a guy called John Howard. And then people just said, no, enough of you. We have seen your face every day. We don't want to see your face anymore. We want a new face. We like this baby face. This baby face, Kevin Rudd, is so beautiful. So they put the baby face. And the baby face is running the country. Everybody is happy. Suddenly a little lady at the back picks him up and takes a small little, gives him a small little kick. And then he's gone. And then everybody is, why? He is elected. Why is he gone? People are trying to understand, why is he gone? He was elected. And then an election takes place. One day it's Abbott, one day it's Julia, one day it's Abbott. Today they said Julia is up, the next year they said Abbott is up, and Julia is up, and Abbott is up. Julia Abbott, Julia Abbott. And it goes on and on. So a child will be wondering, be studying, you know, what is happening? You know, why he was alright, the baby face, even I like that baby face. Why did they remove the baby face, and is that possible? And he's confused. And then, you know, almost there, but then, why, you know, every day, and finally everybody is so fed up. I get my patients when I talk about them, they say, oh, the idiots, monkeys, them. You know, the people are so fed up. But what is the use? But then again, it is not that we don't study about them. The Bhagavatam, the Puranas don't miss anybody. When we do the Vamsavana Charita, and then we will talk about Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, it's all mentioned. All these modern leaders who pretend to be serving the people, but actually serving their own interests. So it's all mentioned there. So whether it's Indira Gandhi or Sonia Gandhi, whether it's Julia Gillard and Tony Abbott or whatever, they're all lumped together. We just have to give them a few seconds and put everybody together and then chuck them out. Waste of time for the spiritual life. So that is how it is dealt with. So that's about what I wanted to say as an introduction. Now, creation, so there is a lot of discussion here on creation. Creation is very sketchy in the Bible. The major faiths like Judaism, Islam and Christianity, creation is the same for all of them, the Old Testament. And God created the first day, he did this, second day he did that, and third day he did that, and the sixth day he did that, and then he was tired. And the seventh day he rested. And so, when this happened about 5,000 years ago, it's a very short history. Creation took place very short. And they can't understand. So people think, you know, it's very, you know, very sketchy how to accept it. So they love, anybody comes with some kind of a new idea about creation, they love it. Because they can't accept it. Because it's silly. They say dinosaurs lived 20 million years ago, Jurassic period, 40 million years ago or something like that. Then how creation? Then where were they? They say they are finding bones which are supposed to be prehistoric, whatever period. So archaeologists are talking about millions of years. Historians are talking only about thousands of years. And then how to and the religionists, the major faiths, you must understand, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, they follow the same thing. They follow the same thing and they fight so hard. I can't understand why. And so what happens is they also people of that faith, they don't believe in it. Of course, we also have our own Iyengars, you know, who go to big universities and they finish Darwin's theory of evolution. And of course, when they go back to India, they will, you know, they'll go to pujas, do all that. They will somehow or other compromise both. One is my profession. And he will very convincingly teach theory of evolution. How we all evolved from monkeys. But the Vedic concept is, Darwin's theory is, we came from monkeys. But the Vedic theory is, monkeys came from us. That's how the Vedic theory is. Anyway, let's not sidetrack. So we'll go back to the main thing. So, because the creation is sketchy, people love this, different kinds of ideas about creation. So, scientists, in order to satisfy the curiosity of these people, they have come out with so many bizarre ideas, which is very, very, very popular. And they all have been accepted. They all accepted as, you know, as there's a big battle going on in the U.S. and all that. Creationists versus, scientific explanation about origin of the universe and stuff like that. Now, in the Bhagavatam, we understand that Mahavishnu, this is our creation. At least we should know our creation before we criticize others, okay? So, in the first instance, Mahavishnu glances at material nature. Now, before that, we have to understand certain terms. We use these terms very, very easily. We use the word terms pradhana, we use the term prakriti, and then we use the term mahatattva. So there are differences. There are very subtle differences, and you have to know. Pradhana is the primary stage or primordial stage, which means in pradhana, there is the three modes of nature, and there is the material. Three modes plus material nature, which is the five elements together, but in an indistinct state. It is not clear. They all lump together because they are developing. It's like a small baby. If that the girl, she's got all that reproductive system, she's got everything, but she can't produce another baby, not yet. She has to become a young lady, and then she has to receive the the sperm from the male, and then she can conceive and produce a child and all that. So though if the potential is there to produce the baby, she can't produce the baby. Because why? She's still a baby. How can she produce a baby? Similarly, the pradhan state is everything is there, but not yet. And from pradhan becomes prakriti, here it's distinct. The material nature, with these three, with the animals, elements and the three modes of matter. But in an equilibrium, sattvas, rajas, tamas, they are in equilibrium. Nothing is disturbed yet. Now comes the third stage when Mahavishnu glances. He just glances. Normally we'll say, you know, one look is enough. So that's all he does, one look. Now, many a times in Prabhupada explains that Mahavishnu does not deal with material nature. He doesn't touch it, doesn't deal with it at all. Then how is he dealing with material nature now? He's not supposed to deal with it. He is like an expert CEO or an expert temple president. He manages it so well. He doesn't touch it, but he deals with it very, very expertly. For instance, if you go to the kitchen, you know, there are a lot of hot pots, and you see your wife, your mother, whatever, all those hot pots, they're carrying with their hands and putting it off. Are they literally, I mean, if you touch them with your hands will get burnt. So what they do, they use tongs. Or even our kitchen, you open the oven, they wear gloves, make sure they don't get burnt. Similarly, the Lord also uses an instrument. He doesn't touch material nature directly. He touches or deals with Ramadevi, the spiritual energy. And Ramadevi, she becomes Mahamaya. And even that glance is considered Shambhu, that's Lord Shiva. That glance is the one that actually penetrates this Mahamaya, and when the whole thing happens. And that is all happening, there's no time. You must understand, no time. There means no past, present, future, nothing has happened. It is not, I'm giving you like a sequence. It is not even a sequence, it is not even this. It's all happening. It's very difficult to understand. It's just happening. And with a glance, the living entity is also gone. Now, in Mahatattva, you got modes of nature, you got material nature, okay, the three modes, material nature, and the living entities. They are gone now. Through the glance, they have already gone. As soon as they go, we are already given a chance. That means when you're first there is a nucleus in the so-called Hiranyagarbha, or golden egg. There is a form of Vasudeva there. And the living entity, I mean all of us, had an opportunity. Even at that stage, we could have seen Vasudeva and said, no, I just want to be with you, and then you could have gone back home. But even then, some people, all of us, because you're stuck here, we decide, no, we want to have some service for ourselves. And then, so the whole thing starts. That same Vasudeva becomes Sankarsana, in a different form. And then the game begins. Now, this Mahatattva can be equivalent to this primordial soup that the scientists are talking about. Now, before we go into that one, first we should understand about the, we'll discuss the various origins of the universe according to science. So that glance and that penetration, that is depicted as Shivalinga and Yoni. So what has happened is some of the Hindus don't understand that, and people say, oh, this is the palace and that's the Yoni, and then they go crazy. They say, no, they become very defensive. Oh, you're making a mockery of Hinduism. How can you say that the Linga is the palace and that is the female organ? How can you do that? But that is the universal thing. It is happening at the universal level. It is actually the universal conception. So it's an egg that is being penetrated, and that conception is what we depict as Lord at Shivalinga and the Yoni on the back, on the bottom. So it's nothing demeaning, nothing thing. It is happening in the level. In fact, Prabhupada explains in one lecture Why man and woman all the time constantly thinking about the sexual act is because of that. Because it happened there. And that's why this thing is all the time disturbing us. Anyway, back to the story. So you just have to know that it is not a false identification, it's a real identification. That is the fallacy thing. Now scientists have many theories about creation. Of course, I'm not going into the detail. Then of course that egg, Garbhodakasha, Mahavishnu explains as Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. He fills it with water and he half fills it with water and enters into that universe. And from his navel comes out a lotus flower, lotus bud, which grows and grows and grows. And finally there's a flower. And on top of the flower, Brahma is there. Brahma is wondering what to do. He meditates and then he understands that I've got to do this job, and he creates. The 14 planetary systems are within the stroke of Brahma's navel, sorry, of Mahavi, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu's navel. Am I confusing it? So the 14 planetary systems. So where are we now? We are actually in the stalk of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. That's Vedic geography I was telling you about. So the next Vishnu is known as Sirudakashaya Vishnu, who is the source of all the Paramatmas, the super souls. Now he resides above and below Satyaloka. You know, the 14 planetary systems, the topmost is Satyaloka, where Brahma is. There is a milk ocean there. Where is it? It's above and below. See, the dimension we can't understand. I can understand above. Somebody can say below. How can he understand above and below at the same time? But that's how the description is. It's above and below. How? I don't know. And in that milk ocean, there is an island. It's called Shvetadvip. It's a white island. And that island is where Sirudakshaya Vishnu resides. So you'll always say when there's a problem, the devas and demigods are creating some problem, and then they go to Brahma, and Brahma says, okay, let's go to the milk ocean. And they land to the milk ocean, and then they sing the Prishasukta Brahm, Sarasasi, Sahastasi, Purusha. They sing this Prushashukta prayers. They can't see nobody there. They can't see anybody. And then, because the Lord feels compassionate, and then he shows a form. And then, of course, the discussion takes place. And then he says, soon I will come and I will destroy this guy, whatever. I'll set peace and order. So you know that. Now, coming to the scientific theory. Now somebody will say our creation is, this is far-fetched, and you know, it's so much of imagination, and it's all like a fairy tale, how to believe all that. Fine, I accept that. Now let us talk about what science has to say. Believe me, science is equally imaginative, if not more imaginative, is also speculative, highly speculative, and is also difficult to accept. The first most common or most accepted form of creation is called the Big Bang Theory. Most of you would have heard that. Now, they say many, many billions of years ago. Now, the latest count, they keep changing, you must understand. They keep changing, and the latest count, they say it is 13.7 billion years ago, there was a Big Bang. And from that Big Bang, you know, a lot of cloud, a big, huge cloud of dust, and the cloud of dust sort of cooled down. And then there was a primordial soup that formed, basically containing carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. And then then they combined, and then it moved protoplasm, and then the single cell, amoeba, hydra, like that, and then went into monkey, and from monkey, then we are here. That's why we also monkeying around sometimes. And that's what they say. Now, you don't try that. Supposing you want to make a soup, you don't go to your wife's kitchen and put all the ingredients and put some firecrackers and hoping that when you burst everything, you'll get a nice soup. Yeah, you'll get into hot soup. Your wife will never allow you into the kitchen again. That is if you're fortunate. Otherwise, these days, she may not even allow you into the house. Be careful, the laws in Australia are very strict. any small little thing, they straight away say, you know, what restriction order, something, you know, you can't come near her. For so many miles, you can't even smell her. So, anyway, what I'm saying is, this is the Big Bang Theory. So, there was a big explosion. And they say this big explosion started from a singularity, a tiny one place, and then from that singularity, this whole thing came. Then actually we'll ask, you know, so how did the, where did the singularity come from? No, that we don't know yet. We don't know yet. You know, and then even big scientists like Hawking says, you'll find out. In 10 years we will know. He said that 10 years ago. And you know, still they don't know. And they'll still, you know, go groping, you know, what is happening. So that is the big blow. Then there is the big bounce theory. Now these guys, they all basically believe in the big explosion, the Big Bang, but there are subtle differences. In the big bounce theory, it is said that before the Big Bang, there was another universe which went through a big crunch. And after the crunch, it bounced back as a big bang, and then the universe was created. Okay, very interesting. But you said there was another universe that went through a big crunch. Now, how did that universe come to existence? No, that we will find out now. You know, just now coming, as they say in India, just now coming. So, they keep saying that we will soon find out how that happened. So, that is the big bounce theory. Then coming to the third one, which is called cyclic universe theory, which means they say that it explodes into existence in a big bang. Of course, in all of them they say it expands. It's expanding. The universe expands at the speed of light, they say. And then it expands so much and finally it crunches again. To crunch, and then what happens? It explodes again in repeated cycles. That when universe comes and goes, in regular cycles. So that is known as the cyclic universe theory. Now in all these theories, you'll find that they are considering the universe to be like a ball. And the Vedas talk about the universe like an egg. Now you'll find that there is some similarity. And cyclic universe theory is almost like Bhagavatam, of course. Isn't it? 100, according to the calculation, is about, we are in mid, this universe is about 155 and a half trillion years. The total age of this universe is supposed to be 310 trillion years. We are halfway through. So, at the end of it all, of course, the whole thing goes back. That means, one breath of Mahavishnu is coming out. We are coming out like soap bubbles. Children playing with soap water. So bubbles coming out. Like that, Mahavishnu's body, the bubbles are coming out. After 310 million years, trillion years, not million, not billion, it's trillion, it's unbelievable. You can't even imagine what is trillion. It goes back. But these figures are given. I'm not concocting these figures. So that is cyclical. And then he breathes out again, and he breathes in again. Every time he breathes out, the universe has come out, and he breathes in. Of course, all this is, you know, Indian mythology, and, you know, they are imagining a lot of things. But what are they saying? They're saying almost a similar thing. The only difference is, they are thinking and writing and deciding everything without God. See, for them, that's the most important thing. It's all happening by something other than God. And, of course, for us, it's all happening because of God. Now, in this chapter, he talks about philosophy, Sankhya. So, I need to say something about Sankhya today. I'd like to say something. That was the introduction all this while. Because it's relative to what we're talking about, creation. In the Indian system of philosophy, it's called Shat Darshan, or Six Systems of Philosophy. Sankhya is one of them. It's the third one. The first one is Nyaya Vaisheshika. Second and third and fourth is called Sankhya Yoga, Patanjali system. And then we have Karma Mimamsa and Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa.
same, Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa, is all trying to find out cause and effect. Who is the cause and effect? Of course, we believe the Hare Krishna movement, or most of the today's modern religious movements, belong to the Uttara Mimamsa, which means Brahman is the cause. And of course, there is impersonal, then Maoists, and then for us theistic, we believe that Krishna is the cause. So in Sankhya, okay, let's forget about that, let's discuss about Sankhya. Sankhya means, the word Sankhya means to have counted. Sankhya means count, 1, 2, 3, 4. So what are they counting? They're counting the material nature, what is made up of. So according to their calculation, material nature is made up of 24 entities. 24. Sankhya means 24 material plus one, that is the source, whom we call as Krishna. So if they add that, that becomes 25. Now, if you all know about Prabhupada instructions, always talk about Kapila and the Kapil Dev, and then he also talks about the imposter Kapila. So yeah, of course, in India, if you go and ask about Kapil Dev, everybody knows. Even a child will know Kapil. Oh, Kapil Dev, woo, malume. Why? Because he's a very famous Indian cricketer captain. He was a captain of India for many years. So they know. But I'm not talking about that Kapil Dev here. This Kapil is, we have read in chapter, I think, Canto 3, Devohiti, Kapil, which means he's, Kapil Dev is a supreme personality of Godhead himself. And he is explaining Sankhya to his mother. Of course, with his discussion, of course, everything causes, of course, the Lord himself, the Supreme Lord himself. Then comes this imposter Kapila. The funny thing, he has got the same name. Okay? Now, he doesn't end there. Both of them had a chief disciple called Asuri. The disciples also had the same name to add to the confusion. Which Kapila you're talking about? So we have to be very careful that whenever Kapila Muni is mentioned, whether they are talking about the imposter Kapila or the atheistic Kapila or the theistic Kapila, that is Devahuti Kapila. Now, so they have text too, like just we have text, we have got Bhagavatam, we have got Bhagavad Gita, so the Sankhya guys, they have text too. So now I'm going to describe about the atheistic Sankhya. So, and then the flaws in the atheistic Sankhya. And that text is called Sankhya Karika. Sankhya Karika. So here, basically what you're talking about, whenever we talk about philosophy in the Vedic system, we talk about Chit, Achit, Ishvara. Chit means matter, Achit means spirit, and Ishvara means controller. Always you must think like that. Matter, spirit, controller. Everybody must know this, you know, that we are talking about matter, spirit and controller. What is the relationship between the three? The interrelationship and who controls what? And where is the mistake? So matter is ignorant. Spirit is trapped. You and I, we are trapped. And controller is, of course, free, independent, and is full of knowledge. Now, to understand matter, spirit, and God controller, we don't have to turn the pages of Vedas, or you don't have to take a telescope and, you know, all that. This body itself has got matter, spirit, and controller. Matter, this body, is made up of 5 elements. Spirit, the Jivatma, who's trapped in this body. And controller, Ishvara, Paramatma, who's also accompanying the Jivatma within your body. So all here. So matter, spirit and controller. Now, here, in the Sankhya philosophy, they talk about matter and spirit. They don't talk about control is, no, it doesn't exist. Totally doesn't exist. See, in the theistic, of course, when I talk about Devita, of course, he says the ultimate cause is Krishna himself. But here they said no. It's not necessary. For them, because it is not necessary. It is, even if they use it for a while, it's like, you know, when you're doing calculations, let x equals something and then finally throw the x out. It's something like that for them. It's not important. It's not necessary. Whereas the first two, Nyaya and Vaisheshika, they are openly atheistic. Whereas this one accepts at least something, that there is Purusha and Prakriti. But their Purusha is not Adi Purusha. I'm talking about the original Purusha. He's talking about Purusha means the living entities. There's no supreme. In our understanding, they talk about Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha is Krishna, Prakriti is all of us, you, me, men, women, birds, bees, everybody is Prakriti. Even matter is Prakriti. We are Paraprakriti, that is Aparaprakriti. We are in Prakriti, we are higher than matter, but we are still the enjoyed. He is the enjoyer, we are the enjoyed, all of us. That is our system. So they accept Purusha and Prakriti, but the Purusha, they also say there are three modes of nature, but he says it is like a constant thing. They believe that the Purusha, the souls, are eternal. They also believe that his soul is eternal. But they say that there is no God, basically. So, their philosophy is called as Satkriyavada, which means the effect and cause is non-different, they say. The effect is in the cause. And they give this famous example of like mustard seed. There is mustard seed and there is oil within the mustard seed. And if you crush it, and you get the oil. It doesn't matter who crushes it. Whether King Kong crushes it or Bruce Lee crushes it, it doesn't matter. Whether you crush it in the morning or whether you crush it in the evening, it doesn't matter. But if you crush it, then you'll get the oil. So this is cause and effect. For instance, like if you say curd, what is the cause? The effect is in the cause. That means curd is the effect, the cause is milk. So the effect is within the cause is within the effect. Now, this Sankhya philosophy may not be acceptable at every place. For instance, in Calcutta, if you go and get curd, you'll get curd, but there is no milk. In fact, there is no cow also. Isn't it? So it is, this milk is from the, or whatever this product is from the West Bengal government, is not one of the 808,400,000 species that we study about. It's some unique thing. In India, you get, like even Calcutta, you get water, but it's not water. You put on the switch, the light goes off. I mean, when you're putting on, it goes off. So this kind of things happen. No, but what I'm trying to say is that what they are saying is it's inherent. Both are together. So it can't exist without being there. Now they call this Parinama. Parinama means what is called as evolution or transformation. If the argument is, if there is no oil and you crush the seed, you won't get the thing, you won't get the oil, so it has to be there. So that way they give an argument. But most importantly, even using the seed as an argument, you can use farmers keep seeds to grow, you know, seedlings. But then all seeds don't grow. Or they keep the seed, they throw, they sow the seeds, only some grow, some don't grow. Just because the seed is already there, doesn't mean that the potential to grow is also there. There is something called potency that must be there. And who's controlling that potency? That is the whole thing. Now, their transformation is called Swarupa Parinama. So you have to understand what is Swarupa Parinama. Then the Maya is called Brahma Parinama. That means Brahman is transforming. God is transforming to become this world. And then say, because he's transforming, he's changing. And because he's changing, he's losing his superior position. And because he's losing his superior position, material nature is supreme. Maya is even supreme. So Maya was. They argue like that. But being in ISKCON, we should know, we also talk about Parinama. We talk about Sakti Parinama Vada. That means the Lord, Parashya Shakti, Daiva Shruyate, the Lord has many energies, And then these energies become transformed. And that when the energies become transformed, this cause and effect. And the energies become transformed, the source does not become disturbed. He is still, you know, he is still the supreme. It does not disturb him. So that's our concept. Sometimes they lump all of us together as Parinamavadis. Oh, you Parinamavadis. But you have to understand, we are not the same Parinamavadis as the Shankyas or the impersonalists. Ours is Shakti Parinamavada. That we have thing. Now, but if you ask them, why this transformation, they cannot give us a real explanation. Or why are we here? If they ask them, why are we here? They can't give a logical explanation. Like we say, you know, we originally from the spiritual world because of our misuse of independence and we chose to come here and we can give a whole 9 yards. They can't explain that. Now, their liberation is of two types. The liberation is two types. They are all the time thinking about the 24 elements. Supposing you give a Shankhya, a Karta, 24. You show him a beautiful girl, 24. You show this 24. For him, everything is 24. 24. You know, he's all the time absorbed in the 24. So, and they say that, and when they absorb totally in the 24, and they are so fixed that nothing happens, you throw a cobra on him, and the cobra bites him, the cobra is thrown, it is 24. Bites him, the poison is also 24. And they say they're so absorbed that nothing happens to them. They believe that very strongly. Of course, in Kali Yuga, I don't know. But that is their concept. When you're totally absorbed, then because you are 24, cobra is 24, everything is 24, nothing happens to you. That is their concept. Now, you can also throw a cobra on a buffalo. A thick-skinned buffalo, and the cobra can bite, but nothing will happen to the buffalo. That doesn't mean the buffalo has got self-realization. Or if you throw a cobra onto a rock, it doesn't mean that the rock, because it doesn't feel, oh, this rock is self-realized. You see, I threw the cobra is biting, nothing happens to it. So that is not self-realization. They also have this, another concept of liberation. When they are so absorbed into this material nature, at the time of separation, when they are separated from the body, they said that they are stuck in this body, and by this practice we can separate and then go back. Not go back, then you become, you know, eternal again. You know, it's a temporary stuck. They say at the time they will get like a big, like 70mm movie, you know, where all the 24 elements will show you beautifully. They said, you know, all. And that is supposed to be your great vision. And seeing that vision, you'll be so happy. That is their concept. But an example was once given by one of my seniors who taught me this. He was saying, like, you know, you buy a tape recorder in India, and then you bring it down, bring there, and then you play the tape recorder. It doesn't work. Then you put on the switch, and the light goes off. And then you put off the switch and the light comes on. Then you're pressing here and you're pressing there. I mean, it's supposed to be a tape recorder. You're supposed to listen to some sound. But whatever sound that is coming is what you're pressing. Tick, tick, click, click. That's what's happening. Then what do? You take a book. Here come, you know, the tape recorder comes with the book. And you open up the book and then you read. Okay, this is the switch and you do that. It still doesn't work. Then of course, you know, they have got internal diagrams, circuit diagrams. So you open up the tape recorder. You go through the whole thing. All the parts are out now. And then you finally realize, you know why it's not working? Because it's not a tape recorder. That's why it's not working. Similarly, they say, this, trying to get your liberation by understanding this, studying this material nature so closely, will not give you the result. You're chasing the wrong whatever. In the last class I was telling you about how that being trapped, we are in the prison cell, and just by studying the prison cell, Sankhya is like that. You're studying about the prison. prison house, by the height and width and whatever you're studying, that will not give you a chance to get out. That will only tell you you're stuck. Chance to get out is, of course, service to the Supreme Lord, and that way you get out. Now, there's one more thing I wanted to say today was about this relationship between Uddhava. Uddhava is such a special person, Uddhava, and Krishna. So there is also an interesting story which most of you may not have heard, which is about Uddhava's position or his leela with in Chaitanya leela. Now, you've heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was initiated by Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri was initiated by Madhavendra Puri. And so what happens, now somebody might want to know why this special affection, why Ishwara Puri? Why not somebody? Why Ishwara Puri? It's because of Madhavendra Puri. Now the next question will ask, so why Madhavendra Puri? It is stated, Prabhupada explains, that Srimati Radharani gave an ecstatic love through the agency of Madhavendra Puri. That's, of course, we're not going to the story of Madhavendra Puri, how that ecstatic love came, that's another story. So, because of that, he has a special affection for Madhavendra Puri. Now, Madhavendra Puri had two disciples called Ishwara Puri and Paramananda Puri. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had special affection because it is stated, Prabhupada explains, that ecstatic love which Madhavendra Puri got from Radharani was given to these two disciples because of their intense service to him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is watching all this. Okay, Ishwara Puri and Paramananda Puri. In fact, talking about Paramananda Puri, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want to miss a word, I am only living in this world on the account of the behavior of Paramananda Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, I'm living on it because of the behavior of this person. Now, because of this close association with Madhavendra Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes initiation from Ishwara Puri. And he's all the time thinking about Paramananda Puri too. Now, to take sannyas, he goes to Kathwa from Keshava Bharati. Though Keshava Bharati offers him sannyas, he accepts it mentally from Paramananda Puri. Because sometimes we know that Keshava Bharati is in the impersonal school. Of course, though many explanations are given that that time, that is why the sannyas system, they were authorized, organized very well and all that, but still, the Lord is doing it. So, when you read it, why, my the school? Okay, we'll come to that later. Now, he accepts the sannyas from Paramananda Puri. He does not accept the danda from Keshava Bharati. Later on, he accepts the danda from Paramananda Puri. And when after accepting the danda from Paramananda Puri, this is what he says, my eyes, my mind, my religious activities and my acceptance of the sannyasa order have now all become perfect, because today Madhavendra Puri is manifest before me in the form of Paramananda Puri. That's what he says. Then again, we still want to know, but why Keshava Bharati? Now, if you know the philosophy of course, Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, this Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, when we always talk about Krishna and the chariot and all that, what comes to our mind is the battlefield where Krishna is as the charioteer and Arjuna is doing the battle. That comes to our mind. But according to our philosophy, that is not important for us. If you go to all the Gaudiya, when you travel in India and go to all these Gaudiya temples, there is a chariot, there are horses, but not that one. This is a scene that you'll see in all the temples, and they'll be huge. What is the scene? This is the scene where Krishna and Balaram are leaving Vrindavan to Mathura, for Mathura. They're going away. And who is riding them, or who's in the chariot with them, is Akrura. Akrura also means cruel. Akrura is taking them away. And in front of the horses, you find all the gopis crying away. They're very, very beautiful picture, actually. All the gopis are stopping the horses and crying and wailing and, you know, one consoling the other. This whole thing is going on because they are so sad that Krishna is leaving them. And they are also cursing Akrura because you came and disturbed the whole thing. We are having such nice fun here and you're taking. It is said that because of that curse of the gopis, that Keshava Bharati had to stay in the Maya of the lion for a while. But Mahaprabhu, being most merciful, also decided to take him from there. And that's why he goes and meets up with him in Katwa and gives him the blessings too. So now the most important question is, now what has that got to do with what we're talking about today? So in Krishna Leela, it was Krishna and Uddhava, and in Chaitanya Leela, Uddhava was Paramananda Puri. Hare Krishna, if anybody has any questions or comments. Sorry? Krantraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Sorry, somebody is asking one question, sorry.
When you were mentioning about the materialistic science, that they had this view of creation without God, just a comment that recently there's more and more through various discoveries that scientists are now becoming more and more attuned that there is a creative element behind the material creation.
As much as, you see what happens, scientists, they know that the unknown factor is there. The closest they have come to saying what it is they are calling it antimatter. We are calling spirit, they call it antimatter. See, still, you know, that it's difficult, it's in the system, they can't. So, but the point is, that may be true, science thinks that, you know, there are many scientists who believe that ultimately it is God. That is true too. But you must understand, the West, majority of the people are becoming atheists now, thanks to Dawkins, thanks to Stephen Hawking, all these fellows. The God delusion. If you go to YouTube, you can see this guy is, but he's a good speaker, he's a good orator. And they're very good, and the young people are getting so attracted to him. That is true, but that is true, and there was, of course, there are some attempts to do it, you know, to refute his work, the God delusion. Actually, Satyaraj Das is working on a project. Satyaraj Das. Because he's one of the greatest scholars in ISKCON, and they were asking for some information, and even I wrote about the theory of evolution, Darwin's, why Darwin was a believer and became a non-believer, quoting certain historical things, but he replied, but we do not know at what stage it is. But they got a nice title for it, the God delusion and the God, whatever. But there's a project going on, but the young people are very attracted to his, because he's very flamboyant, stylish, very flamboyant, and he speaks the language, and he just denies it, so. But our answer is, this is my reply to them will be, denying the existence of God is alright. Now we have so many social problems that's going on today. Divorce, family problems, alcoholism, drugs, unbelievable. I mean, you know, mental illness, so many other problems are going on. Now, just by denying God, are you going to help solve these problems? You see, the problems will become worse. It is you, yourself, individual, you do what you want to do. It will become more chaotic. See, but on the other hand, if you have this, the Krishna conscious philosophy, that we believe in God, and we begin in the laws of God, and then we get our senses and our act together, our intelligence gone astray. We get everything together, and then by practicing it, we can do all this. We can solve the dark problem, we can social problems, we all roll into one. This is one answer for all the problems. And we've got evidence to prove. Such serious drug addicts became great saints, you know. Can be done. Prabhupada said, he said, remain high forever. You take your drugs and next morning you're gone. You take up Krishna consciousness, you're high forever. You don't need the drugs anymore. Practically everybody in this country is on drugs, some kind of drugs. Isn't it? He himself may be divorced and remarried and whatever. There was a great, Carl Sagan was one of the greatest astronomers in man, and I was young. And, every week they used to, I can't remember the name of the Cosmos, the name of the series was Cosmos. Every week we used to rush to the telly to see this. He takes you, you know, in space, it's a space flight. Today we are going to Venus, and today we are going to Jupiter, and all that. And those days, you know, we thought that was fantastic. The techniques, of course, today's technology is so high. The same guy, he quotes Srimad Bhagavatam. But the funny part is, he married 6 times. And the 7th time before he could marry, he died. This is the truth. I mean, so, you say all that, and but, you know, you're still looking for happiness. You seem to know the whole thing about the cosmos, and you don't know the happiness within. The Vedas very clearly says, the macrocosm, or the microcosm, is a miniature model of the macrocosm. That means this body is a small universe by itself. The right ear, for instance, that's where the Ganges is. And you have the Himalayas, you have the continents, you've got everything within this body. The devas and the demons, everything is within you. So, this is a totalitarian concept, and then you'll be happy. And only thing is, they don't want to take it. See, the scientists, they'll all, like Munis too, see, though the 6 systems of philosophy, the Munis, they heard the truth from Brahma, but they all had their own interpretations. And Munis are like scientists. One will beat the other. The Sankhya fellow will beat the other fellow, and it goes on like that. In fact, when Prabhupada was lecturing at a place, and one of the reporters is following him, and then he said, what is this, Your spiritual master is speaking the same thing every day. I am not this body, I am not this body. Same thing every day. So the disciples went and told him, this reporter said, alright, don't worry, next time I'll speak different. So the next class, Prabhupada said, I am not donkey. And then he made a whole thing, you guys think that, it has to be different. When it's simple, and just, Swamiji, what should we do? Chant Hare Krishna. That's all? How can just chant Hare Krishna solve problem? No. It has to be complicated. I have to pull my ears, I have to pull my nose, I have to pull my tongue. Tell me something. Then only, there must be some truth in it. How can it be so simple? So it goes on. Very well. Science of the soul is not mentioned. In all other religions, they only mention the word soul. Like what you get in 2nd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the origin of the soul, like you can't burn it, you can't dry it, you can't cut it. And the transcendental journey of the soul towards the next body, even the origin of the soul, they don't know. They can't. They just the mention of the word soul. That's all. More than that, they don't know. See, most of the concepts have gone from the Vedic thing. And see, we talk about the five. Okay, we talk about the Katha Upanishads. The body is compared to five horses with, you know, the chariot with five horses and the driver and the mind and the senses and all that. The same thing is also there in the Greek Aristotle or whatever. They talk about the same thing. The soul is, you know, but the chariot has got two horses and they take the concept and then it's distorted. So in the Vedic concept is taken to the Greek concept. The Greeks have, the Romans borrow it from the Greeks and they've changed the names again. And then first, then the Anglo-Saxons have taken some of it and it goes on like that. But now they're accepting that most of it is coming from India. But there is no, except for the mention of the word soul. More than that, if you want to understand about the soul, they don't understand, they are very confused.
What is the
difference between? I don't know whether you're talking about, when you say Tattvavad, are you talking about Dvaita philosophy as such? Or?
Not Dvaita, between Madhva Sampradaya and this Tattvavad philosophy, which is often, sometimes I see it also in some references.
I don't know. I should know, but I don't know. It doesn't click. See, Madhvacharya had this Ashtamath, he had this eight monasteries. There, this Ashtamath, that what happens is that I can't remember the name of the title for each one of them. They run the Udupi temple is the base, just like Ramanuja was Srirangam. Now every 2 years, or I think it was 2 years, each person will come and run the temple. And then it goes in. Because he made sure that, you know, there is a nice way of maintaining the temple so that it doesn't get carried away or taken over by some people. So, when you talk about the person you mentioned, what's his name? Raghavendra. Raghavendra is a partial expansion of Prahlad himself. So he started his own mat. So I don't know. I don't know how this comes. But scientists quote Bhagavad Gita, like Oppenheimer, who, you know, created the atom bomb, and when he saw this mushroom cloud in the Arizona desert, so he was a Jew. He could have quoted from the Torah or the Bible. But he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, "Time I am, Kalasmi." He says that Kalos, this in mind, I destroy everything in time. So that is a very famous thing that Einstein and all these people fascination for the Bhagavad Gita. I can, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to ask. Basically, Vaishnava tradition accepts Jesus as the greatest spiritual master. And in the same time, Bible evidences that Jesus ate fish because he liked. Some people think that there is a contradiction because, like, Vaishnava tradition bans like eating fish, and Jesus. So how it comes together?
Look, one thing firstly, some, like they say, like you say that he ate fish, but they say there are many Christians who say he didn't eat fish. They give me an, I can't remember the name, it came from the air and all that.
Yeah, it's like there was some distortion in the...
from one loaf. He had, there's one particular miracle when that he had, a lot of people to eat, and he had one loaf and one fish or something, so he made many and then he distributed. He doesn't say that he ate. But more than, you see, but you must understand, Jesus Christ was dealing with the class of people was pretty difficult. Fishermen, he actually was dealing with fishermen. All of them, all the 12 disciples are more or less fishermen. And the understanding was pretty different. But do you know that Jesus Christ, if you look at the life of Jesus Christ, at the age of 12, forget about that eating, that's nothing. Look at his teaching, Sermon on the Mount. How could he speak like that? Isn't it? Sermon on the Mount is Vedanta already. Somebody slaps you on the right cheek, offer him the left cheek and all that. What is that? I mean, they don't understand. How do they understand that? But you look at the life of Christ. He's preaching in the synagogue at the age of 12. And then what happens? He comes back from the wilderness at the age of 30. 18 years of his life is missing. Now that is more important. According to the gospel according to Saint Aquinas and Thomas or some Aquinas, I think. Yeah, Thamakrishna Maharaj has mentioned a lot about this. There are a lot of evidence to say that he was traveling in India. He was in Benares, he was in Tibet. The Tibet monastery, there are a lot of writings about Jesus Christ being there. And if you learned his yogic thing, and even Puri, he was in Puri. And Jagannath, he was worshipping Jagannath too. So there are so many things. And then how can a personality whose life is so important and his life be missing from age 12 to 30? Isn't it? You can't remember what I can't remember what I did in 3 years, 4 years and all that. But certainly 12 years to my 30 years, I know exactly what I've been doing every year. And like Prabhupada's disciples didn't know what Prabhupada was doing, but Prabhupada is telling him what he did and they kept on writing. But it is not there in any one of the Bibles. Why? It's expunged. It's just like torn off. Just removed. They cannot accept the fact that Jesus Christ could have done all this, and there's a whole lot of geopolitics. Reincarnation is also accepted in the Satyaraj has come out with the thing in his booklet, and it mentions all Christianity and Vedic philosophy, all the similarities. You see, forget about Jesus Christ being vegetarian, non-vegetarian. He's Son of God. That's not, it doesn't matter. But the point is, there's so many similarities. Christianity and thing. And therefore, of course, now they won't agree with all that. So, the missing years of Christ. Still, there are so many movies, I can't rattle all the names of the people who did this, Nikolovich, this Russian fellow, and the church was so much against them. See, what we are saying is, they can't say, this is Christ said in St. John, I am the way and I am the word and all that kind of thing. But, then they just accept Jesus Christ. And then after that, they don't know anything about it. That Jesus Christ is the agency for their suffering. He has taken this agency. So I accept Jesus Christ and I'll do my nonsense. But I'll go to heaven because Christ will take care of it. So we don't believe in that. For your sins, you have to suffer. Your neighbor won't suffer. Why should your neighbor suffer? Isn't it? So we are saying that we are better Christians than the Christians themselves. We follow the Ten Commandments. We do all the thing, whatever they say. Isn't it? We're following whatever the laws. Of course they say we are pagans and all that. But we follow the teachings very strictly. Whatever you say don't do, we are not doing. We are happy not doing. They're not doing. They're hypocrites. And then they'll say, oh, I'll kill you, whatever. And as Kali Yuga becomes matured, more and more matured, you'll feel the problems become very, vegetarianism now, a lot of people have become vegetarians. Yeah. Not because of religious reasons, for health reasons, economic reasons.
Yeah, so it's not possible actually to find out is it a fact that Jesus ate a fish or not. It's more kind of acceptance. So those people accept the fact that he did. And
some people on the floor have got answers.
No, I'm just
No. You've got a right answer. They will answer your question. I think they're all excited to answer. Yes, so give Prabhu a chance first.
Actually, just on a historical point of view, it is noted that Jesus Christ was a Nazarene.
Wasn't what?
He was a Nazarene, which was a sect of Judaism, which was following the Vedic principles of vegetarianism, the reincarnation of Karma. The clearest indication that we had that Jesus was a vegetarian was the main Last Supper that he had with his disciples, which was the Passover feast. And if you know Jewish tradition, the Passover feast is celebrated by the slaughter of a lamb.
Mm.
But throughout all the Gospels, there is not one mention of the lamb being present at the Last Supper that he had with his disciples. All that is mentioned is that it had bread and wine. The lamb was such an important part of the Jewish culture that would have been a feature. If there was nothing wrong with it, and if Jesus ate meat, it would have been indicated in that portion of the Bible. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's only the bread and the wine. He said, this is my body, this is my blood. As I do, this is a remembrance of me. So there's no mention of meat there at all. And actually, the first Christians, up to 300 years, that there was a great group of people that follow the teachings of Jesus that were also vegetarian, and that's documented. So there's a lot of evidence saying that actually he was a vegetarian in his own life. But it's been skewed by so many other different teachers over the years.
Okay.
Rui, you want to say something? Rui, you want to
I was just going to say there is a really good website about this. It's called JesusVeg.com.
It was written that to one of the apostles, when he was on the roof of the house, suddenly a sheep appeared and there was all meat on the sheep. And God appeared to the apostle and told him, eat. And he said, but my mouth never has touched these untouchable things. He said, my mouth has never touched these untouchable things. So the meat for them was untouchable. And the God told him, what the God has made it pure, and you can eat. But actually, the meaning, they explain in the Bible, the meaning of that, he wanted to send his apostle to preach to the Gentiles who were considered untouchable. So God actually, through that story, he told him to preach to untouchable, but he wasn't telling him to eat meat. But through that, it showed that this apostle actually never touched meat.
Anyway, we have the Seventh-day Adventist Church who, they are very strict vegetarians, if I'm not mistaken. So there is. But in the Bible I've read something like came from the air, you know, some kind of... What? Manna, that's right, that's the word of manna. Hare Krishna, thank you all for being patient.